No, organ on a chip.
Organ on it, like well, hot dog on a stick? What? Organ on a chip? This is
Yeah.
like the Kentucky State Fair.
The end of the world is coming fast. Seems like the good times never wanna last. Oh no, kind of thinking we're all doomed.
Happy Doomsday, Renfro.
Happy Doomsday, Lauren.
I want to get right into it.
All right.
I've discovered I am, with today's topic, I'm a scientist.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can tell by the glasses.
Yeah.
Incredible.
A real scientist. So this topic today, super dense, obviously, but it made me feel really smart because I know a lot of words.
Yeah.
Like, I know a lot of words that people use in science.
That's impressive. You didn't have to look up every word?
I didn't have to look up every word.
I think I would.
They were saying things like epithelial and naive pluripotent. And I was like, oh my God.
You know those words?
I know these words.
All right, well, go slow for me.
You know where I know these from?
What?
Like ninth grade biology.
See, that didn't stick. That didn't stick in my head. That fell right out.
For some reason, it stuck for me, and I feel really smart. So I'm a scientist now.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. At first, I thought I was going to feel really dumb because there are some things in here that I'm like, I'm going to have to look up every single thing that's being discussed in layman's terms. But I'm so smart that I was able to take in all that information and dumb it down for us.
Dumb it down for me, at least.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
That's incredible. I'm very impressed.
So for the listener, today's episode is called, Oh No! Organoids. And this topic came because I think sometime last year, either you or I sent one of the other a TikTok that shook us to our core.
Yeah. Existential techno dread. Yeah. Definitely our vibe.
Shook us to our core. And I'm going to play it for you to see if it similarly shakes you to your core. And I just want to play it again to remind you, Renfro, of how scary it was when we first saw it.
Okay.
And just to kind of set the tone for what it is we're talking about today.
I've got news on the human brain organoids. You know, the organoids. Those little human brains that we grew in jars that grow eyes capable of seeing and processing light. You know, the ones that scientists made play Pong and did better than AI, and it's currently being used to develop biocomputers. Well, the issue of vascularization may be pretty close to being solved. When they grow for too long because they aren't attached to a functional heart, they end up becoming hypoxic. Some scientists try to solve that by placing it inside a mouse brain, and it actually made connections and worked. Well, considering they're able to grow it next to a decapitated mouse and it took over the muscles, scientists figure it could probably work together. So we can actually make larger, more complex brain structures by growing the different structures of the brain separately and then fusing them together. With this, we're able to make more complex brains, and now we're making them mentally ill. With fusion, they're actually able to grow structures that they weren't able to grow initially with the brain organoids, and that includes microglial cells. From here, we may be able to understand different mental illnesses, as well as things like Alzheimer's and plaque disorders. The idea of having a brain organoid that's mentally ill is a little bit concerning when we're talking about biocomputers. I imagine they would always become mentally ill. Although what I'm more excited about is being able to put different brain structures and fusing it into live brains that have become damaged by TBIs or strokes. Although the ability for them to be sentient is a little bit concerning when we're talking about implanting them into other people's brains.
What's she talking about? I forgot, that's so confusing. It's just scary. It's just scary things I don't understand.
But that's what I'm here for, the science.
Yeah, all I can do is the broad strokes, and the broad strokes are disconcerting, and that's all I know.
Yeah, pretty much all you hear from that video is like, hey, we make brains in a petri dish, and we're making them mentally ill.
Yeah, I love that the way she's like, I expect they'll be mentally ill. That's sort of just going to be.
Like, it's such a sensationalized video that I had to deep dive into the scientific method in order to break this down for myself and for you. I actually think I'm doing the Lord's work.
Oh, wow. There's a lot of self-praise in this episode.
I don't know.
You're on a mission from God.
Yeah. There was a lot there. I love your reaction to the video. You have no idea what's going on. I imagine that the listeners are also like, "What? I don't even understand what she just said." But I have something to visualize this for you. I'm going to break down organoids in a simplified way. So that we're all starting on the same page about what are organoids. Because according to her, it just feels like we're making these miniature versions of a brain and are running with it. But that's not entirely true. Okay. And the other thing I was thinking about, sorry to go in an aside, I was thinking about there are some things that we're going to be talking about on this pod that are more gloom than doom. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is one of those episodes where it's a little bit more gloom than doom. But the possibility for doom is great.
Okay, so you mean it's not like impending threat, it's just a downer concept.
It's gloomy with the possibility of doom.
Okay, well, that's why we're very diversified. We have both.
Yes, we have both. So that's what we're going into today. So I'm going to present this to you.
I'm excited.
Oh, no! Organoids! A presentation about organoids. Because I need to break this down in simplest form. Mm-hmm. My degree is in journalism, so I'm going to use the who, what, where, when, why, how method. Okay? Who is doing this? Who's working on organoids? Scientists. Scientists are working on organoids, mm-hmm. in case you wondered who. What is an organoid? This is the most important piece. They're small, simplified versions of organs that are grown in a lab from stem cells. Now, what does that mean? It does not mean they're miniature versions of organs. They take like a tiny piece of the tissue from a given organ. Actually, I have an entire slide that discusses this.
Okay.
So I'll wait till we get to the slide.
I'll reserve my questions.
But essentially, it's not a miniature version of a given organ. It's tissues from a given organ that have the stem cells we need. Now, what is a stem cell? A stem cell is a cell that can replicate into any given type of organ or any type of cell it needs to take on. It's kind of like what's a mutant? It's like a mutant cell.
Huh, okay.
It's like a mutant cell. Like, it can become other things. And there's a lot of issues with that we'll get to, the ethics of where they pull stem cells from and all that jazz. But an organoid is not a miniature version of a given organ. It is a representative cellular tissue sample that replicates some of the activity of a given organ.
So could I say that what you're saying is it's not like they're regrowing a whole liver.
Right.
But what they're growing is tissue that is the sort of tissue you'd find in a liver and might even be able to do some of the same processes. But it's not literally growing a liver.
Exactly. Exactly. And then it's only doing whatever that part of the liver is doing. So you'd have to get multiple stem cell samples from that area of the body in order for it to replicate those areas.
Gotcha.
So it's not a whole liver. We're not making whole livers or whole brains.
Okay.
That's Mythbuster number one from her video.
Yeah, she definitely made it sound like we've got full brains that we're growing in a dish.
Yeah. Okay. Where are we dealing with these organoids? Everywhere, all around the world. All around the world, we're dealing. All the science labs around the world are messing around with organoids. Everybody's involved. The entire scientific community is very exciting, actually. Not for me, but for them.
Happy for them. It's a new toy to play with.
When? Constantly. They're constantly working with organoids.
They should take a break sometimes, I think.
Around the clock. Whenever the sun goes down in one part of the world, the next part of the world picks up on the organoids.
Oh, my gosh.
This is a global 24-hour, 365 effort.
Okay.
Which is scary.
Yeah.
But also maybe not. Let us continue. Why are they messing around with organoids? This is a big one. For drugs and disease. That's the simplified answer. The pharmaceutical companies are looking at, like, what are the effects of certain drugs on certain parts of the body? What are the effects of certain diseases on the body? And they're using organoids to study those things. So, say there's a drug for cancer treatment, right? And they want to see what are the effects of it on the liver that you brought up earlier today. They would take an organoid, a liver organoid, and test that drug on it to see what happened to it.
Okay.
Yeah. Any questions?
No, I mean, I think at least in the layman's terms, I understand they can see how this thing would react to any given disease or a vaccine or something, but they're not having to actually use a real organ for it.
A real organ or even an animal.
Yeah, so. That makes sense for, makes sense ethically, makes sense in terms of just repeatability and accessibility.
Exactly.
Look at that. I see why that's
Look at you. See, you see why it's more gloom than doom?
Yeah.
It's a little gloomy because, like, diseases shouldn't happen.
But there's sun coming through those clouds, you know?
There is. So that's why, that's the main reason why. But they're also using organoids to just understand parts of the human body that you can't really go in. Like, I can't take you to a lab, Renfro, cut open your brain and study it. Like, it's nice to just, like, take some pieces.
I mean, you could, but it'd be the end of the podcast.
Yeah. Can't have that. So that's the main why, drugs and disease. They even used it for COVID, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so the how. We kind of covered this a little bit, but you take a human, you pick an organ, right? In this case, she's talking about a brain. You take some cells from that organ. And what do we know about cells? That the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. That's the one thing
we all remember from elementary school.
That is what we know. You take those cells, you put them in a dish that replicates as best you can the environment that those cells exist in the body. So you have all these, like, plasma and things, science things that go into the petri dish that create an environment that replicates the environment that the cells came from.
Gotcha.
Right? And that's what makes it grow. So it'll have, like, blood flow and things like that, so that it can grow into three-dimensional forms, which sounds creepy. It'll grow into three-dimensional forms, but I say creepy, it's only about a millimeter big, which I don't know what that means entirely. I'm not going to lie to you. I just know that that's small.
Yeah. But I can see, it's on one hand, it seems creepy to just grow a full organ, but then also, on the other hand, growing this, like, weird abstract in-between, I think is actually creepier.
Okay, why?
Because it's uncanny. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I think it seems like a very good net positive for developing vaccines and stuff like this. But it's not human, but it is organic, and that's what's creepy. It's this weird in-between of life, you know? It's of life, but it's not life.
We're going to get to a little tinfoil-y moment about that later on. But...
Oh, boy.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. And I've worn this tinfoil hat since, like, 2001.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and it's not really tinfoil-y, I guess, but a little bit. Anyway, so we're in the dish. We've replicated the environment that the cells came from, and it's growing three-dimensionally, which is important in comparison to the two-dimensional petri dishes that they used to put tissues in, because... Once it's three-dimensional, it starts to act more accurately to the way it would act in the body. When it's, we are not two-dimensional figures, and nothing in our bodies is two-dimensional. So the second it starts to become more three-dimensional, it can actually react and give us results that replicate more closely what's happening in the body.
Gotcha.
What do we do with that? We study it. And that, my friend, is your intro to organoids.
I think that was a good basic foundation.
Thanks. I wanted to make sure we were working on the same page so that when it got a little deeper, we have our baseline.
Yeah, so far, I'm following.
So far, you're following. Fantastic. So now I want to kind of dispel some of the stuff that she was talking about in that TikTok video, because it was a little fear-baity, don't you think?
It's TikTok. She's getting clicks. Yeah.
But it sounded... good. It sounded like she knew what she was talking about. And that's the danger. That's the danger of people putting out this kind of information, because most people will not become a scientist like I have.
Yeah.
So first, brain organoids are not sentient.
Okay. Even the ones that are using brain tissue, they're not sentient.
Even the ones that are using brain tissue, there are no organoids that are sentient.
How do you define sentient scientifically? Okay. Do you?
So, the ability to be aware of and respond to your own environment that might suggest that you're self-aware.
Okay.
There is nothing in an organoid that suggests its own self-awareness at all.
Okay.
That's how I define sentience. That's how I always understood sentience. And that's how the scientific community defines sentience. It has to do with your self-awareness and your own consciousness of what your environment is and what's going on. And there are no organoids that suggest that they have that ability.
It sounds like what's happening is too simple for that to come into play. But do you know how, in any capacity, we would measure that? Like, they don't have arms to wave and go like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, what would you be looking at that would tell you?
There's a couple of... So this is where it gets a little more gloomy toward doom, because I think the measurement of that unravels all these different possibilities of what awareness can actually mean at a cellular level.
Yeah.
Because one could argue that awareness is knowing that something else is there to build upon yourself, which organoids do. And I think that's the issue that people have with organoids. It's like, well, how are we measuring awareness? But at our with our current accepted understanding of awareness, it's like when you put a mirror in front of a dog and they react to themselves. It's like, okay, that dog has a certain level of awareness, but other dogs just don't react at all. And so we do that based on how we can measure it. But that's not to say that eventually we won't decide, because I think all these definitions are some form of deciding that this is what it means, right?
Yeah, it's subjective to some extent, right?
Yeah. That's not to say that at some point we won't decide that cells communicating with other cells is awareness. Like, they're at least aware of other cells in the environment and what they need to be doing with those other cells.
Yeah. And it's maybe subjective whether that's like a machine response or if you want to call that sentience.
But could you at some point decide that a machine response is also awareness?
Yeah, I see the sticky or the philosophical gray area.
Yeah. So I think at some point, maybe the definition of it will change. But for right now, there are no brain organoids, no organoids that have attained sentience or their own awareness of what's happening or what's going on.
Thank God. That's all I got to say.
You got to say it.
Somebody had to say it. Thank God.
Yeah. So that kind of dispels a little bit of what she's leading us to believe in that video. Like, there's no sentience yet.
Gotcha.
But maybe she feels differently, and that's why she said it. I don't know.
Okay.
So a couple of the things that I learned about, which are actually quite interesting, and I think she mentioned this in the video as well, it's about the use of organoids with AI. And the way she talked about it in the video is kind of, or she just brushed over it because she talked about it from a previous video that she had also done about this. She talked about it as if the organoids are controlling AI or AI is controlling the organoids. And that's not the case at all. It's essentially AI is collecting the data.
Okay.
And analyzing the data. Very, very, very different. Very, very different. It's collecting the data, and depending on how they've set up the study, AI can be used to adjust the environment of the petri dishes, right? So, like, they'll know, oh, the organoid needs more blood flow here. So it'll make predictions about the life cycle of the organoid based on how it's reacting and basically tell the mechanism that feeds into the organoid that you need to give it more blood flow, you need to do this, you need to do that. So it's more of like an instructor, a watcher of the organoid when humans are asleep. Yeah,
but it's a more informed way of regulating things. It's
exactly,
got it,
exactly. So mythbuster number two. Yeah. And the other thing, because I went down that AI rabbit hole, which was really interesting, I went down a microchip rabbit hole, which is fascinating. And I'll try to break this down in a way that, like, really gets you jazzed like me, which I know puts the happy in our doomsday. And I'm sorry about that. But it did make me happy because it was really fascinating.
No, that's our whole vibe, is being fascinated by horrifying things.
Yeah. So there's these microchips that are essentially have chambers that you insert the organoids into. And by way of those chambers, because the microchip is powered by some electrical something externally or internally, it feeds the organoid along these microchips. And you can, ideally, you can take that microchip and implant it into a person to help with whatever disease or whatever issue they're having on that particular organ. So it's almost like a tissue implant. But it's called, guess what it's called? Guess what it's called? Do you have a wild guess?
No.
It's organ on a chip.
Organoid a chip?
No, organ on a chip.
Organ on it, like a hot dog on a stick?
Yeah.
What? Organ on a chip? This is like the Kentucky State Fair. What are you telling it? Organ on a chip. That's so unserious. Corn on the cob. This is not serious science.
This is very serious science.
Well, I should go back to making things like silly Star Trek references when they name stuff. Organoid on a chip. I'm not trusting that with any disease I have. On marketing alone.
Oh, well, you know what? It's funny you say that because my take is that the whole organoid name is bad marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's already scary sounding.
It's already scary. Android. Paranoid. Organoid. Like, yeah. What are we talking about here? Pick a better name.
Yeah. Call them like Blob Friends.
Blob Friends? I don't like that.
Just goofy little blob friends.
No. I don't like that. One, I don't like blob. I don't like that word. It's an ugly word. Two, it makes me think of the blob.
Yeah, you're right. I thought of that.
You know how much horror gets to me.
Well, we could just call them friends.
Organ friends.
Yeah.
I don't know. Tissue friends. Epithelial friends. I don't know. I'm just throwing out my fancy words. Anyway, but isn't that cool? When you really think about it, like, yeah, it's a little bit like, what are we doing? But it's also like, how cool is it to use a microchip as a chamber for a series of organoids and then use that to implant the broken, sad part of an organ?
You know, I got to say, I just, a couple of weeks ago, rewatched David Cronenberg's Existenz, and that's kind of what it's about. People get these creepy organic chips implanted into them. But, you know, that's a whole thing. That takes them into, like, a virtual reality world. Different subject matter. But in their world, it's such an easy process. You can get them done by gas station attendants.
What?
Yeah, so maybe we'll see that day.
I don't know if I want a gas station attendant putting a chip in my body.
Fixed up.
Well, the thing is, like, so when at first I was a little bit freaked out about that, I was watching all these like talks and reading these white papers because, again, I'm a scientist now, about microchip, well, organ on a chip. And at first I was freaked out about it because I don't like the concept of a foreign object in your body. But when you think about pacemakers, you think about a lot of these different types of internal mechanisms that help the heartbeat or help anything do anything.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I mean, people get entire knee replacements with titanium.
That's true. And if anything, it's closing the gap between organic and artificial.
Yeah. And I probably didn't adequately describe this, but the thing about organoids, ugh, we hate the name. The thing about organoids is that it's using your own stem cells. So, you know, when you like get a, maybe not you, but when people get transplants, right? It can reject whatever the organ is. You get a heart transplant, whatever. It could reject the organ because it's not you. And I think they say the max of transplantation is like 12 years. So say you get a transplant when you're a kid, you're going to have multiple heart transplants throughout the course of your life if you're lucky, right?
Okay.
And so the idea is with organoids, eventually we'll get to a place where you can grow full organs. Or at least grow it to a point where when you do transplant, it's not reject. You don't have that rejection process because it's already your own cells.
Growing it from your own cell. So I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty fascinating.
That's cool. It makes sense.
Yeah. I like that there's people doing the absolutely mind-numbingly boring work so that we can be fascinated by it.
Yeah. So we can pal around on a podcast about it.
Yeah. Because I can't imagine sitting there in a lab studying organoids and watching them do what they do second by second, day by day. That sounds exceptionally boring.
Yeah. It's like watching paint dry, except the paint's gooey. Stays wet.
Paint's gooey, 1 millimeter big, and it's got its own blood flow. So it's a little weird.
Yeah, a little weird.
A little weird. I do want to talk about the ethical concerns because, I mean, how could there not be? This is, when you really think about it on its face, this is insane, actually.
Yeah. It's very science fiction.
Yeah,
for sure. Like I said, it's exactly like something you'd see in a Cronenberg movie.
Yeah. So let's go to the extreme, the doom, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they grow to like full complex systems, which is what would be required in order to achieve sentience, according to the current definition of sentience, the organoids are not complex enough to grow at that level, at least not yet. But if they grow, some of the ethical concerns are, would they need to have some sort of protections under the law? Thoughts?
If we're talking about just organs that are grown and they're not, I mean, they're taken from someone else's cells, but that person's not really losing anything, right? So it's just purely an organ. In terms of like ethics in the way that you think about sentience and stuff, I don't think so, unless it's a brain.
Mm-hmm.
That's a separate category.
Interesting.
Otherwise, okay. No, I'm sure there's ethics in terms of like regulation. And I feel like there's probably a pretty high threshold level to who should be trusted with making these and putting these in people, you know? I'm sure it shouldn't just be like a new farm industry. It should be pretty controlled because it sounds dangerous. But ethically, no. If it's a brain, I don't know. That's a whole separate rabbit hole.
Why are you making the distinction between if it's a brain and every other organ?
Who cares about the ethics of a pancreas? It's just not thinking about being a pancreas.
We don't know.
It might as well be a corn on the cob, right? It's just a thing on a tray.
My own pancreas has shivered at the things you've just said about it.
Oh, I hope it can hear me. Because I don't even care. I think a brain, I mean, how many science fiction films are about this exact thing? A brain grown in a lab. The brain that wouldn't die. The man with two brains in movies like that. I mean, that is scary to think that you could have this conscious brain, but because it doesn't have any sort of external input that we have, like sight, sound, or anything, it would be maybe sentient but unaware. Like, it doesn't have a way of forming a cohesive reality, even. But
we're going deep.
but it's a brain. It's sentient.
But is it sentient if you're saying it's not aware? Because I feel like that's
maybe
a key
not.
Part of sentience.
It is different. It is different. It's not on the same ethical level as your brain and my brain. We created it, and it's not aware, really, right?
Yeah. I think it's aware of its own surroundings, just like we are, right? Like, we're only aware of what we've been exposed to, period. I think part of sentience has to do with that awareness and being able to make judgments according to that awareness, which is why eventually maybe the definition of sentience will change, because who's to say that when a cell is in a petri dish and it's being fed all the things it needs to be fed and multiplies and forms these 3D structures, who's to say that's not some level of sentience? Maybe sentience as a whole is an umbrella term for levels of awareness.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't just wholesale say sentient, not sentient, and just judge it all the same. There's a lot more complexity, and on a case-to-case basis on what we're doing with it and what we're doing these things with.
But I do think it's very convenient, very helpful to judge it black and white, sentience, non-sentience, because then you get to say organoid brains or brain organoids are not sentient. You know what I mean? Like, you get to say that and everybody feels better.
Yeah, at least for now.
But if you say brain organoids have developed eyes and these other things, then it's like, whoa, that's very, very scary. But that's, you could argue that that's a certain level of sentience.
Yeah. Well, so she did talk about them developing eyes.
Yeah.
If you look into more if like they can use the eyes or if it's like a vestigial, just a, like an organ that doesn't work growing.
So overall, organoid studies are very, very new. I think they came about in the 2000s, right? From everything I've seen, it's in the early 2000s. So any study about why they're doing what they're doing or how they're using what they're doing is extremely underdeveloped. So in a nutshell, no, I didn't really find very much about what are those eyes doing, because they're just fascinated by the fact that it grew eyes. So we don't know enough yet. It's still so early. And just like, we still don't even know the whole brain. Like, we still have no idea what the rest of our brain is doing. So I think we have a ways to go. Like, it's fascinating that we're already creating these, like, not replica, but these replicated environments of a brain in a petri dish while not understanding our entire brain in our heads. So I think we have a long way to go.
But like you were saying earlier, you know, it's a lot harder to study a human brain naturally, because you need a dead person who's offered their body to science. Whereas if you can just grow these things by the dozen.
by the millions.
Oh, wow. Next
They're
one.
So tiny, and a lot of them don't survive beyond a certain point. Like, it really is a delicate process of, like, how are we replicating the environment of these organoids? It's a delicate process. And they're 3D printing stuff now, which is where the...
Makes sense.
The transplant stuff comes in. But it's interesting. I think the ethical concerns about sentience are valid, and I think it has to do with the levels of sentience, like us redefining what sentience means. I think sentience, as we understand it now, is very broad, but what the average human is looking for are when they're trying to explain to different boards to get funding from the government or whatever that looks like, these boards or these people who are in charge of the funding are feeling uncomfortable with the different levels of awareness these tissues seem to have.
Yeah.
And so there may be a point where we have to redefine it, or we have to create these tiered sentient systems or definitions.
I could see that being a big conversation in the coming years, especially because I think we as humans are very prone to anthropomorphize things.
Mm.
You know, like there was that Google AI scientist who came out saying the AI is sentient and it wants to be freed. And I think that is just a case of someone anthropomorphizing something. It is just a code that's predicting what you're going to say, and it's mimicking speech, but it's not sentient.
Yeah.
But we as humans, I mean, you put two dots and a line on a piece of paper and we see a face and we assign it a personality. It doesn't take much. Humans are always looking for that.
Yeah.
So I think that there's going to be easily, like we have with AI right now, a gray area period where a lot of people are going to be saying it's sentient, but on paper it's not really, but it's just sort of the empathetic part that's built into our human brain that we're just always looking for sort of sentience.
Oh, that's so spot on, because I'm thinking about how we are with animals and how we project onto dogs. Like, oh, it's smiling. It's like, no.
Oh, yeah.
It's not. We want to feel that. We want to connect with it. And yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way. I just got to pause for a second and say, we sound so smart.
We sound like geniuses, kind of.
We sound pretty genius.
It's a little bit spooky, even.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this one study that I got wrapped up in, and it took me like a week to really get out of it. I was so wrapped up in it. There's this 2020 study called Merging Human Brain Organoids with Mouse Brains.
Huh.
Yeah. So I went down this rabbit hole because in that TikTok video, she talks about them putting human brain organoids into living mice. And I found a study that supports that, but she kind of distorts it again. It gets sensationalized. Mm-hmm. And so there were where human cells were incorporated with animal cells. I'm pausing for effect because you don't seem too alarmed by this.
Human cells combining with animal cells. I don't really know what to make of it yet.
So people, this study, the reason they used animals, let me just start there. The reason they use animals is because it's better than using humans. Like, we don't know, there's all these sorts of ethical concerns about using humans. Obviously there's animal welfare concerns, but less so than human concerns. We don't know what you'd be doing if you put that into a live human. Like, if you put mouse something into a live human,
right?
We don't know. But they wanted to see if it was possible to connect these cells with animal cells to see if there's something in animals that could help with disease maintenance or discoveries or drug discoveries and things like that. So, like, perhaps you don't have to always go to other human cells, but you could potentially use some element of animal cells.
Use a similar cell that we share with another animal.
Yeah.
Can I ask, were you reading a scientific paper or was this a copy of Animorphs? Maybe you picked up a book of Animorphs and thought it was a science book.
No, it was tricky. I did have to double check that. But so Animorphs are essentially, except the morphing part, they're called chimeras, C-H-I-M-E-R-A.
Hey, we're talking about like the books from grade school?
Yeah. But it's a real scientific thing where you have two different species, the cells from two different species come together to make a new thing, a hybrid animal. Think centaur, right?
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
And so people are afraid of that. People are afraid of like creating these chimeras that...
Understandably, yeah.
Yeah. Like, what are we going to do with this?
Island of Dr. Moreau kind of stuff.
Yeah. We're so far from that, though, that keep it in your back pocket, but don't be actively afraid of that, because we're very, very far from it. Also, in my deep dive, chimeras just exist in life. Like, huh? There's
like a zonkey or something like that. You know?
Nothing that drastic. But
zonkies
like,
exist.
Wait, what?
Yeah. There's one.
What the hell is a zonkey?
It's a zebra and a donkey.
What?
You mix a zebra and a donkey, you got a zonkey. There's one at a gas station near my parents' place in Fort Worth.
Yeah.
It's a big attraction. They got a zonkey.
Wait, that's insane.
Or, you know, like a liger from Napoleon Dynamite. They really have those. Lion and
so
tiger.
I think on some level that's different. That's just crossbreeding.
Yeah, same species.
Yeah.
Well, zebra and a donkey's a little weird.
I don't know, man. This not like, just blew my mind.
It's not like an eagle and a camel or something. It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
But that's insane. Like, you just blew me away with that. I don't even know where to go now. Like, what the hell is a zonkey? Like, who did that and why? That's insane.
Love is love.
Anyway, so, but I think that's more crossbreeding than it is like creating an organism from different species.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, but that exists in nature as well. Like there's a long, long, long rabbit hole to go down with twin studies and intersex people that suggests chimera being an aspect of natural life as well, just not to the extent that we see it every day or understand it every day or even interface with it every day. So
interesting.
That's one of the ethical concerns. Like, what kind of organisms are we creating if we're mashing together these two different species?
Yeah.
Here's the thing that's crazy. The human organoid that was put into the mouse worked. Yeah, it's in that study. They successfully developed and formed connections within the mouse's existing neural network.
Did the mouse become smarter? Is that what happened?
No.
Or did it just get like a day job and do human stuff?
No, I didn't see anything that suggested anything like that. It was more like wherever they placed the organ, I believe it was somewhere within the spine. It was like watching or studying that organoid connect with the existing and watching it do things and successfully survive.
So this takeaway of the study is purely that it was able to accept it and adapt it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Which is nuts.
Yeah, but it is the first step. Makes sense.
It is the first step to Chimera. It is the first step to Centaur.
Yeah, giving a little human brain where it wants to like wear clothes and walk around, that's like 6-7 steps away.
All right, here's a little bit of maybe doom. So there was another study that talked about brain organoids in a mouse and how it did create more complex vocal abilities in a mouse. Like when they were alerting other mice to danger, it vocalized differently than other mice.
Interesting. Weird.
So pretty soon we absolutely will have Caesar from Planet of the Apes.
But with mice. He'll be running around your attic going, "Hey, idiot. Come and catch me, idiot."
Stuart Little, on his way.
Oh, you're right. You're going to pop around in a little car.
Yeah.
I'd adopt a Stuart Little, for sure.
I would not. I am terrified of mice. I don't enjoy them.
Even if they wear a little tie and they got a little car?
Nope.
Wow. That's prejudice.
I think anything that talks, that should not, will always terrify me. Like, as much as I loved Planet of the Apes, that was freaky.
Well, you know, monkeys are a little more, they're a little too close to humans. It's a little uncanny. A little mouse with a tuxedo? That's awesome. That's fun.
I don't love it.
Well,
it's too tiny.
I'm on board for our Stuart Little future. Put it on the record.
Put it. What's funny is we just talked about Feivel.
Oh, yeah. And you like Feivel.
I do like Feivel.
But in real life, he'd be like, ew, get away from me.
Yeah, in real life. Ugh. I hate it. Okay, more ethical concerns. Obviously, there's misuse concerns. You brought this up earlier. Getting this into the wrong hands.
I could see an organ black market that's just all like shoddy organs. And this is also everything we've mentioned has, I'm trying not to mention movies at every turn point. It's like, yeah, there's like a million sci-fi movies about this exact
concept. This is science fiction, but it's science reality.
Yeah.
It's science reality. So what I think about when I hear misuse of organoids is like biochemical warfare. Governments using organoids to study how certain biochemical weapons affect the body. Like, they've done stuff like that for centuries to testing on actual people to see, oh, what's going to happen if we use this kind of chemical.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is a easy way to do that. And they're the ones who have the money to do stuff like that. So I think about that, which is a whole lot of do. I think about drug inventions. Like, when I think of, maybe I'm thinking about a highly scientific cartel, but I don't know. But I'm imagining them creating insanely addictive strains of things. organoids.
You just need a Walter White. That's all you need.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm imagining.
Yeah.
And, the worst one that I thought about was, like, monopolies over genetic material, right? Like, large pharmaceutical companies, and most of this, I think, in the U.S., like, large pharmaceutical companies hoarding any research done by organoids to make medicines more expensive for cancer patients or any chronic diseases.
Yeah.
And being able to hoard that only for the wealthy.
Yeah,
I think that's
a lot of advancements, but they're going
to
be, all the advancements are going to be behind a wall for the average person.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Most people are thinking, like, I think they're going to misuse this by creating a centaur. And I'm like, no, I think they're going to use it to make money off the average person.
Yeah, I think they'll come up with
to make more money.
Economical cure to something and then charge $50,000 per treatment or something. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, cancer treatments are already insane, but imagine them having made a breakthrough in cancer treatment. For as long as we've seen, like, all these commercials, breast cancer awareness, and all this fundraising over years, like, billions of dollars has been raised. Imagine if the entire time there's some organoid study that cracked it wide open and they're just not providing it because they make so much money.
Yeah, that's always the big conspiracy about pharmaceuticals. I think the only easy counter to that is there is just enough competition globally that if one of them has a solution to something, it would benefit them to get it out first. And I think also we like to talk about cancer in terms of, like, the cure to cancer. That's like every cancer is a completely different
thing.
Which I do think maybe in some way things that are really adaptive, like organoids and AI, could be a big jump in, like, figuring out those things, because they're, every different kind of cancer is a completely different ballgame.
Yeah. Well, they've made incredible strides, but the thing about organoids is that a huge amount of this is still theoretical because it's such a new area of study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So much of it is theoretical. And there are a huge amount of ethical concerns.
Yeah. Understandable.
Like, where they're getting the stem cells from. Jeez, we can't even get people to be okay with the use of embryos or the use of umbilical cords for stem cells. So, and those are the most important stem cells to use because they're virtually unlimited in what they can grow into, the types that they can grow into. But you can use adult stem cells, but they're limited in what they're able to do. Like, it's almost like whatever your morphability for, I just made that up, but whatever your morphability would be as a baby or as an embryo is, like, you're not defined yet, so it's just, like, able to be whatever it needs to be, given the environment that you give it. If you replicate a liver environment, those stem cells will become a liver organoid. You know what I mean? Versus an adult, like, you have to pick from that space in order for it to become, it can only become the thing that you pulled it from.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So there's a lot of those kind of ethical concerns. And I'm a fan of, like, if the adult who carries the embryo is okay with it, then they're okay with it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind using an embryo or umbilical cord for this kind of research.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty cool.
But like I was saying earlier, people are anthropomorphizing things so much that it is going to be, every step in this direction is going to be a new ethical conversation.
Yeah. Okay. This is the tinfoil moment that I talked about earlier.
Oh,
a little
yeah.
bit of a tinfoil moment. Because we talked earlier about, I guess, sentience and levels of life or whatever. And this is my tinfoil hat. Mm-hmm. I have a longstanding belief that everything in the world, in our world, went off the rails the second we were allowed to patent life. I remember reading about this, like, in maybe 2001. And I don't know how I came upon this information, but I remember reading about, there was once a time when you weren't allowed to patent genetic material. You weren't allowed to patent anything that could create life of some sort. And then there was this one trial, some guy won a case in like 1980, and it became legal to patent life. And from that point on, all bets were off. And I wrote this down because when I put my tinfoil hat on about this, I went down the rabbit hole to see what that case was. And the result of that case was as quoted, anything under the sun made by man can be patented. And I remember reading that or hearing about that in like 2000, 2001 and being like, what?
So you're saying if you created life, it could be patented because it was created. Is that what you're saying?
I'm only saying what the court case, what the judges said, which is anything under the sun made by man can be patented.
Wow. I think some Mary Shelley fan wanted to rush in and get that monster patented. Anything under the sun. Is this an American trial?
Yeah. So this was, I didn't write it down. So I'm not that good of a scientist. But I just remember there was some guy, and he argued that a living thing that has been altered by human intervention or created was novel and unnatural enough. Like, it was non-natural enough to be patented, basically. And so then that's when they said anything under the sun made by man can be patented. And I personally think that's when our entire world went off the rails.
Weird. I've never heard this. Huh. Interesting. Well, I'll separately deep dive about that because I have to know more.
All right. Well, here's why I say it. When I hear anything, what is it? Anything under the sun made by man, that is so subjective, it's insane.
Yeah.
Because even your question is like, anything that you make, okay, we'll define make. What's the definition of make? Because you could argue that make is, I had a baby. Can I patent the baby?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I just think it's so broad and open-ended that I wonder to the extent to which it applies in modern laws, or if there's too many conflicting, more specific things.
Yeah. But I think the reason why this is a tinfoil moment for me is because I think this is where you can go off the rails with organoids, right? Like, we talked about the different tiers and different levels of sentience. Well, if anything under the sun made by man can be patented, then whatever they are creating could be patented. So if you're putting that into people's bodies, what kind of ramifications, protections, or whatever does the human who has it in their body have against the thing you've patented?
Imagine you've got a chip in you and it has some kind of like DRM protections on it and you can't get it. It like turns into John Deere where it's like, you can't repair your own tractor. You have to take it 200 miles to the nearest manufacturer and make an appointment.
Now we're talking. Now you're in the doom. This is why the tinfoil hat is on.
Yeah, I see where you're going now.
Yeah. I didn't even have to tell you. I'm so glad that you went there on your own.
I pulled the string. Yeah.
You pulled the string.
Pulled the yarn and it unraveled.
Yeah, like where does that lead us if you like, the science is fascinating. Of course it is. This is wild stuff we're talking about here. But if you have patented material in your body, what protections do you have, or what control do you have over that material? I asked the same question about, like, in vitro. In vitro, the procedure, I'm sure, is patented, right? But what about the material that is used in vitro and implanted in the human body? Is there something that they're going to argue at some point that belongs to whoever owned the patent?
Yeah, this I see what you're saying.
This is where the tinfoil comes in.
I think maybe the more likely things that we could see coming from, like, this line of thinking is, say, Elon Musk is trying to put chips in people's heads. And that would run into easy, like, that's a patented thing. You own it as a product, but we own the product and run a service with the product. And now you're explicitly tied to that company. Whereas I don't think there's many cases where something, or just because there's no precedent for it, and that's such an old, broad case, I don't think people are going to be trying to claim babies as property of Pfizer or something.
You don't think so, but I'd like us to take a look at all the reproductive things that are going on in the United States and how insane that is, and what they might argue later down the line if things get more and more fanatic in life. Well,
if you're a scary billionaire listening to this podcast, turn it off. We're not trying to give you hints on what to do next.
More so, I mean, I think in vitro is already expensive, and I'm sure it's because it's like this patented procedure or whatever. But I think about even the designer babies that they talk about, right? Where,
yeah,
like, you get to pick and choose all this genetic material that results in the sex that you want, certain features that you want, and things like that. Like, that's insane, first of all. But also, I think about that kind of stuff when I think about patenting life.
Like, I keep talking about all the movies that come to head with every talking point. And yeah,
it'll be the,
like,
substance on steroids.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say Gattaca, but. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Even better.
But
listener,
I could see
the match. Will always be better at the movie Rasmus than I am.
Yeah. And this is going to, I'm going to normally reference, that's my tether to real life. It's just things that remind me of movies. That's how I get through every situation. Yeah, imagine there's, like, a really pretty iris color that's some kind of genetic specific thing, and then they patent that. You're like, hey, you want this crazy, fiery, green, red iris in your baby? It's going to be $600 upgrade. We've got that genetic code for you.
Crazy.
But there really is a future, maybe not what I just named as pure sci-fi concept, but there are plenty of little genetic modifications that are going to be possible. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of legitimate reading on. I don't know much about it, but
maybe I should read about it.
That could be a
designer
separate
babies. That'll be my next scientific study.
That would be a good future episode.
Yeah. Disturbing.
Next time you want to be the Bill Nye of something.
Yeah, I'm the Bill Nye of organoids. All right, I'm going to wrap it up. The good of organoids, or I will say the good, nothing's good. The happy of organoids is that it has advanced drug testing and personalized medicine and the study of diseases. So that is the happy. The doom is that so much of the benefits that are possible are incredibly theoretical. It can get into the wrong hands and be completely misused. It can hurt a ton of animals. And yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Oh, and no, and large pharmaceutical companies can monopolize the studies.
Yeah.
So that's organoids.
Wow. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
It's a lot to unpack. I think my broad takeaway about organoids is that it's probably a net positive, but there are so many pitfalls that we need to be watching out for, because there's so many ways it can go wrong. And even when it's positive, still gross. Still creepy.
Still gross.
I'll maintain that.
Still gross.
Yeah.
Still some cells and some goo.
I still don't love it. I still don't love it.
I don't know that I ever will. But it is fascinating.
It is. Very fascinating.
Don't know that. And I think I'm more than anything, the 3D printing of organs from organoids is really where I cringe.
It's always just, I mean, it's like every Cronenberg movie, it's a cross-section of organic and technology that's just, it's not right.
Yeah.
And I think it just, in it, something primal in all of us kind of goes,
yeah.
Oh, that doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
Not supposed to mix.
When, with things like this and any real deep study, I'm always like, why are we doing this? And I get the why from we're trying to study drugs and diseases. And yes, but there's some part of me, and I don't know if this is my primitive brain, there's some part of me that's always like, it's just survival of the fittest. But then... I know. Very but also Darwin.
The people who have the money to be the fittest are going to be even more. It's the rich getting richer, but now genetically. And that's...
Yeah. Yeah.
That's dark. When you get to the Gattaca of it, it's dark.
But, like, I appreciate the study. The more developed part of my brain appreciates it, understands it, wants to go forward with it. But then, the primitive brain is like, well, once upon a time, it was just like, if you got a thing, you just died. Like, survival of the fittest, right?
Yeah.
And I know that sounds very callous, but I think that's a prevailing part of a lot of people's brains when they don't understand these studies. Mm-hmm. It's like... No, you're just gonna die. Like that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing that we can't go down because we're out of time. I think the other thing that we have to keep in mind when getting into that primitive brain is that we have so many more occurrences of these diseases because of the environment, food, and circumstances that we currently live in that we've never lived in before.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think my closing statement is this. Organoid study, fantastic, scary, worrisome, but I like to see it in tandem with environmental and food changes that don't require them to do as much of this kind of stuff. Does that make sense?
I agree with all of that.
Yeah. It's like we're doing this in response to... Like, I really want us to address the reasons why these diseases are popping up the way they are and all that stuff. I'm sounding very RFK, and I'm very sorry about that. I'm very sorry about that.
Yeah,
that was not my intention at all.
You know, the root of all of these things have a little nugget of truth, of all the scary stuff, a little nugget of truth, and they spiral out of control. We're trying to keep things contained.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think this was more doom than gloom. No, I think this was more gloom than doom.
Yeah.
Which is good.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Just a little gloom. Don't worry, listener. We'll get into some heavy doom eventually.
Some seriously heavy
doom. Got a little gloom to get rolling.
A little gloom to get rolling. But maybe we should rename the episode, actually, instead of, oh, no, organoids. It's like, oh, perhaps.
Organoids. Oh, perhaps. Exclamation mark. Organoids, yeah.
Mayhaps, organoids.
Yeah.
Anyway, organoids need to change their PR, as discussed. It just sounds bad.
Yeah, new name would be a great fresh coat of paint for that entire study.
Yeah, yeah. So, thanks for coming, listener. Happy Doomsday. Make sure you rate and follow Happy Doomsday everywhere you get podcasts. Follow Happy Doomsday Pod on all socials except Twitter. And until next time, happy doomsday.
Happy doomsday.